TFM.
Fun will now commence.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Journey, our dedicated Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I took the liberty of scheduling a metabolic scan for you this morning. The doctor's going to help me with that. But don't worry, it's just a precaution and nothing to worry about. I just thought that, you know, I heard you had been in the vicinity of Rhynax, so I was a little concerned.
Sure. I'm incredibly worried feeling very anxious. And hopefully this turns out to be nothing because, could this be fatal? Is there anything really to worry about, Chris?
I wouldn't worry too much. I mean, you've eaten so much Leola root. If anything was going to kill you, that would be it.
Are you trying to just tell me you're sure it's fine? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay, great.
No problem. All right, everyone, we're going to continue our 30th anniversary rewatch today with Jatril. It's episode 14 of season 1, and here is a quick rundown of the story. When a Hakonian shuttle hails Voyager and asks to speak with Neelix, the ship's cook and guide is shocked. The caller is Dr. Mabor Jatril, and they have a past. Jatril designed the Metreon Cascade, a weapon that killed more than 300,000 Talaxians, including Neelix's entire family, and left him without a home. It turns out the scientist is dying from a disease caused by the Cascade, and Neelix may be as well. Jatril says he's come to offer medical help. Neelix does not want to have anything to do with him. But after Jatril comes aboard, both men discover that the secrets they have been carrying go deeper than they want to admit. So, Matthew, we got a very serious episode of Voyager here as we get close to the end of the season. And surprisingly, after we had a character episode with B'Elanna, we get one with Neelix. Now, were you expecting, as you were watching through the first time, to dig into Neelix's character, given who he had been up to this point in the show?
No, I don't think that I was expecting really to be diving into Neelix in this way, in this episode, especially, you know, with there only being one episode left in the season. But I mean, I'm not opposed to it in that sense. I mean, I definitely think, you know, of all the characters on the show at this point, Neelix is probably the one in desperate need of some help. Mm-hmm. I think that he's the one.
You mean in terms of the character development for the viewers?
Exactly. Yeah. I think that, you know, this is the character that I'm least likely to connect with right now. I would say that even just rewatching the episodes, you know, I'm not connecting with him for the most part. I find him to be pretty obnoxious, as most people did, I think, at the beginning. So to do this, I think, is a good idea. You know, can we find a way then to bring this character to life that doesn't just feel like he's always going to be there for comic relief or always going to be there for pining after Kes and being jealous of her in really creepy ways? Yeah. I mean, you know, I just, there is something in incredibly, as I rewatch this, you know, the whole aspect of the fact that Kes is this young girl and Neelix is a middle-aged man is just a really strange dynamic to me that I do not like at all. And I just don't think it works. And a big part of that is because I don't really find them to have a ton of chemistry on screen.
Yeah.
And so I just feel like this is a good opportunity, hopefully, then to take Neelix to another level. And so I don't know, how do you feel about that? Especially, you know, I know we've both seen these episodes a few times at least, usually, but how are you feeling originally about Neelix? Were you kind of in the same boat at this point?
Well, Yeah. I mean, I don't think Neelix bothered me originally in the same way that he did you. He was never my favorite character or anything, but he was fine. I think, you know, Ethan Phillips plays the character well. I mean, he's a good actor. He plays the character well. So it's just the stuff that they give Neelix to do is sometimes a bit odd. The Kes thing is interesting because I don't remember being bothered by it as much at the time, because obviously I was much younger at that point. And also the world was different. And I think I just took it as purely a sci-fi concept of, you know, they're both aliens and her species lives this long and all.
Right.
It's a creative decision that they made that I think has not aged well at all and looks really bizarre to us today. And especially when you watch it when you're older and you're actually thinking more about the relationships and what all this stuff means, you know, it's really something that I think they should have gone back to the drawing board on.
Yeah.
But, and especially what we've seen up to this point, most of the time is him being jealous of Tom Paris and Kes and,
right.
and things like that. Now in this episode, you know, they do use Kes effectively, I think, in drawing something out of Neelix and helping him make some important decisions in the story and doing it in a serious way that if you set the age difference aside, then at least the characters interacting with one another
sure.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. So
you know, when you asked about, you know, is this the right time to kind of do a Neelix episode? And I think that this really is the time to do a Neelix episode, because I think even kind of thinking back to my thought process then, but then what has been reinforced, I think, in my rewatch now, this character needs help. It needs something to make it come alive in just a different way, a way that feels more interesting and worthwhile to have on the show. And so I think I think that's the thing that, you know, has been missing so far. So
I wonder if they felt like, because Voyager was such a reaction to Deep Space Nine, where they wanted to get back to the TNG feeling of, we're always on the ship, we're always going to different places, and the stories are not quite as serious and heavy as Deep Space Nine was becoming at the time that this was being, the development of this maybe started before DS9 got too heavy, but by the time this aired, we were very much into a much more serious DS9. And so I wonder if they felt like they wanted to have this kind of comic relief character. I mean, Quark is kind of that on Deep Space Nine, but Quark is not the typical comic relief.
Right.
Like, he's not like straight comedy, right? He has a different side to him. So I don't know if that was something that played a little bit into, maybe they wanted to have a Quark-like character, but they wanted him to just be a lighter character. And so they came up with the Neelix. But I think at this point, we're almost at the end of season one, but in reality, this came in terms of writing more around the middle of season one, because a lot of the season two episodes were actually written for season one and then cut the season short, you know. So I guess they were getting, you know, past the halfway point and feeling like, yeah, we need to start fleshing out these characters a bit more. So we got Faces with B'Elanna, and then we get this with the Neelix.
Yeah, I think, so this episode has a real historical feel to it in the sense that it is very much referencing our past here. It is, I don't know, this episode is like Oppenheimer's gamut, right? He is, the character we meet of Jatrell is a stand-in for the character, the historical character of Oppenheimer, who of course helped create the atomic bomb. He was the major force behind it. Of course, everybody at this point seen Christopher Nolan's film on it, which is great. So we're playing with the idea of what happens to a scientist who is so preoccupied with if he can do a thing, he doesn't think about if he should do a thing. And it leads to this weapon being used and this war between the Talaxians and the Haconian Order, right? And so that is, I think, when we talk about, okay, should we have a Neelix episode here? Should we get deeper into this character? Well, that is definitely, it seems like almost as deep as you can go by playing with that.
Right. I think the choice to build this framework for the story around a parallel of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki makes sense for giving Neelix a backstory that actually has some real impact on him that you could potentially play with a lot along the way to unpack why he's the way he is, which they do a little bit in this story. And they return to the impact of it a bit more, I guess, like in the seventh season. But they had the potential to do more by giving him this backstory. And just from a science fiction point of view, it's something that I appreciate because it's social commentary. It's looking at our own world and then grafting that onto alien cultures so that you can then talk about it a bit more. But it's something that we can look at and understand that, yeah, this happened in our own world and it had an impact on individual people. It's something that, you know, maybe in more recent years with things like the film that you mentioned and such and more discussion about it, there's a bit more understanding of the impact on people of those attacks during World War II. But I think that, you know, the country I live in, very much we feel the impact of what it meant on a personal level to people. From the other side, I don't know that that was always the case because it's more viewed as one moment in a broader conflict. When I went to, was it in October or November? When George Takei was here in Tokyo to speak to us at the Foreign Correspondents Club about his book, children's book that he's released in Japanese, but he told the whole story about his grandparents and the impact of firsthand being out of town. I believe it's Hiroshima, being out of town when the bomb went off and coming back and finding the disaster and all. And so it's just a really incredible personal story. And so it's a strong historical moment to build some background for a character from.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that you had mentioned just in the outline too, this episode very clearly kind of feels as though it's a play that's talking about a thing that feels much closer to what happened in 1940s Earth than the 24th century Delta Quadrant politics, because, you know, Jatrell will say things like, you know, his country or the world. And it's very much a reminder of the way in which this power that was unleashed on the world by Oppenheimer and his creation, it is a force to be reckoned with, right? And what it did to our planet is the same thing in many ways that it did to this area of the Delta Quadrant and the war between these two species. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it is a really interesting idea to build an episode on.
Yeah. Even if it might feel a bit on the nose to some people, I suppose. But
I think it works here. I think it is, but at the same time, you know, all of Star Trek and all of, most of our stories in some ways, right, are referencing some sort of like historical aspect to kind of build out whatever they're doing, you know. That's just a part of storytelling. We utilize the human experience as a whole to create other stories to help hopefully teach and show us things that you might not see just by looking at a history book. But, you know, reading a story, we might be able to pick up more readily on. And so, you know, I think that's the...
Especially like the next generation's The Game, you know, where everyone gets addicted to a device. So,
I mean, you know, as funny and silly as The Game was at that point, you know, I do think it is hilarious that this idea that everybody is just, you know, in a scrolling haze, you know, that's what that game is. And they even rightly talked about the idea that everybody is feeling this way because of the dopamine hits that they're getting with the with what happens in the game and how it rewards. I mean, they nailed it. This episode, I don't think there's any way in which I would ding the episode for having the references to what's happened here in our history to tell the story here. You know, I think more than anything, it kind of just comes down to, do they execute it well? I think those are the questions that as we talk about the episode, that'll be more important than whether or not they should be utilizing this as a way to tell a story.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about that? Like, I feel that to this point, what Ethan Phillips had been given to work with on the show was so silly and comedic, and it wasn't a serious role, right? And suddenly what they've done to try to build his character here is they've just stripped him of that comic relief that had defined him up to this point. And they throw him in this situation where he may be facing death, and because he can see that, and also because the whole catalyst for the situation that he's in is what happened 15 years earlier, and then he's being faced with the scientist that created the weapon, and it brings up these memories that he lost his family, and he feels this guilt. And so, you know, he's got this whole grandiose story about how he fought in the conflict, or he was in the service, and he has this regret, he wasn't able to stop it. And then we find out, like, it's all just like a made up story. It's something that he never would have normally revealed. And so it's such a serious situation for him. And you know, I feel Ethan Phillips plays it really well for just being thrown suddenly into a serious role where he has to play that role, not just as an actor who does a new movie or a new role or something where you know you can switch gears, but he has to play the character of Neelix believably, but without all the normal wrappings of the character.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he does a good job here. Look, I think you know, he's normally been the clown on the show.
Yeah.
And
Tears of a Clown, I called it this section.
And so now he is going to have the Tears of a Clown. And I think, does that work? And I think Ethan Phillips does a pretty good job here with what he's given in this episode, and to just basically turn 180 for who this character's been, and to do this is pretty impressive. I think, you know, he's done a really good job there. And, you know, I think that one of the most challenging aspects of this too for the character was that he had to play somebody who is also regretting his choice. He's regretting his choices here. You know, he is somebody who has portrayed himself as being, you know, a real hero, and somebody who was willing to fight fire with fire, you know, was willing to be the guy that, you know, everybody would want to be. And in the end, what we find of Neelix, which I think you're right in some ways, does kind of have a lot to do with the character at large, which is he is a character who has no bravery. he is a character who has no thought really kind of outside himself. Mm-hmm. And because he really only cares about his own survival. You know, he wasn't willing to mm-hmm. be self-sacrificial and join the army. And he utilizes the idea of being a conscientious objector to be able to get out of that. And he realizes that now, that that's what he was doing. And to me, mm-hmm. that's a great opportunity then to say, hey, this is what the character arc for this character is then. This character's mm-hmm. arc is going to be one which we have to get them from a place to which they are completely self-focused and self-centered to being a character who is willing to be more like our Starfleet characters, which are selfless, right? Mm-hmm. And if mm-hmm. we're going to do that, that's kind of the road you have to take, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the thing that's pretty stinking interesting then about this character.
So it's an interesting parallel because this episode falls in the same slot as Duet on DS9. It's the next to last episode of season one. And what you just described for Neelix is somewhat similar to the situation that Kira faces in Duet, in that she's having to face some beliefs, thoughts that she's had in the face of, coming face to face with someone, and the fallout of those interactions set the character on a different trajectory.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love that you call that out because it truly is a one for one. In the sense of the comparison of what they're doing with the characters, right? Mm-hmm. And the episode really is...
And the setting in that it's very much like a bottle show. I mean, it is a bottle show. They were trying to save money. But it has that very intimate feel. Like
100%.
You got...
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and... Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that's interesting here is that, you know, Duet is a great episode, and I think this is a pretty good episode for the most part. Mm-hmm. But really what you judge then Duet by, and you will judge Detrell by, is what they do with the character as you move forward. And so that is really going to be, I think, the hallmark. Yeah. You know, we've been talking about the promise of Voyager. Is it living up to its promise? One of the promises that this episode makes is that the character of Neelix, there is a ton of depth to. There's a lot of psychological mm-hmm. issues here. There's a lot of things that need to be worked through. And there's a lot of character growth that needs to happen with this character. And mm-hmm. will they do that? And, you know, we know from Deep Space Nine, and this is not the Deep Space Nine rewatch, though. So we know that Kira's character is going to have a massive character arc from start to finish. This point, the question mm-hmm. is going to be for us in this rewatch, are they going to do that with Neelix? And I do think that that's a really interesting question, and I'm not going to say yay or nay here, because that's the fun of doing this rewatch with you as we go back.
We're going to see how it unfolds.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. All right. Well, one other thing I wanted to throw in there, just talking about Neelix's character and building it and all, is that, as you know very well, Matthew, Jeri Taylor wrote a book called Pathways, in which she provided background to all the main characters of the show. And in the section for Neelix, in Neelix's story in that book, we learn a lot more about his background on Rynax, the devastation of the Metreon Cascade, the impact of losing his family. That's all fleshed out there. So I do recommend, if anyone wants to kind of add more depth to viewing this episode, go back and read that book, and, you know, it'll fill in some stuff for you.
And they're about to talk about it on Literary Treks.
Yeah. All right. Well, any last thoughts on this one, Matthew? What are your final thoughts, and what's your rating?
Yeah, I mean, This is one of those episodes where, you know, there's that whole moment of forgiveness at the end, you know, and I think
you get that
moment right of forgiveness. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that Neelix realizes that Detrell is not the guy that he thought he was. But mm-hmm. Neelix also realizes I'm not the guy that I pretend to be. And therefore, I need to not only forgive him, but I need to forgive myself if I want to be able to move forward. And I think that's one of the things where it really does a lot for the character. It does a lot for the episode. I would say, though, final thoughts for the episode is that one of the things that kind of makes this episode fall apart a little bit is just this whole idea of trying to bring back the people that were lost in this cascade. There's no way they're going to be able to make that work and to make that happen. And so there is a little bit of a letdown that this whole episode is kind of building around a thing that in the end it can never actually be. And so that's a little bit, it's not surprising, but it does take the episode and make it, I don't know, there's just something about it where it doesn't feel like the whole thing really comes together in the way they would want it to. You know, you comparing it to Duet, it's like, yeah, this is not Duet. And everything about that episode was kind of like picture perfect. And I think that the reason that is because this episode is a little bit too focused on the techno babble at the end that they're trying to solve instead of just the character story. Duet, on the other hand, never does that. The whole thing is just the character story for both of them.
Yeah.
And that is the hallmark of Deep Space Nine is really knowing how to, if we're going to talk about the characters, if we're going to dig into the characters, if we're going to let you behind the curtain of these characters, then those episodes, man, it's going to be all about the characters. And there's many episodes of Deep Space Nine, right, that I can mention, I could think of In the Pale Moonlight or Dr. Bashir, I presume, as just two great examples of ones where every single thing about the episode is reinforcing the character moments. And that's a thing that I just think the thrust of what Jatrell is trying to do and all of that kind of takes away a little bit from that. So I'd say I'm still going to give this a very generous 4 out of 5 stars. I still think that this is a good episode. And again, it's going to be, I think, a really fun experience as we watch the show. And, you know, are they going to take all of the pieces here that they've laid out about this character of Neelix, and are we going to capitalize on that? So I'm kind of excited to see, you know, what they do with that. So what about you, Chris?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you bring up that bit about the transporter, because that's something, people have talked about that being kind of unnecessary, perhaps. And what's interesting for me with this one is when I think back now, I always kind of mix up that moment in this episode with Daedalus on Enterprise, where you've got the inventor of the transporter itself trying to use the transporter to bring his son back.
Yes. It's very similar.
So on the timeline, So that came after this, but on the timeline, the Daedalus comes first. Those actions come first in universe. So I always kind of get those mixed up in my head a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the other point you talked about with Neelix, and it, sorry, seems to be the hardest word, but he comes through at the end. And I suppose what I did like about that ending is that it leaves it kind of vague for the viewer. Like, you're not sure if Neelix really means it or not. My reading of it has always been that I don't think Neelix actually forgives him, but Neelix finds this humanity, sorry, Klingons. I don't mean
or Talaxians or Vulcans or, oh you my know, gosh, so specious.
He finds his Talaxianity to ease Jatril as he's dying and just give him that last little moment. And if you view it that way, if you view it in that sense of, well, he probably doesn't really mean it, but it is something that he would then carry forward with him. And
yeah,
it should influence how he develops as a person
yeah.
from this point on. So, you know, I think that's good as well. Yeah, I think, you know, comparing it with Duet as I did, it's certainly not as strong an episode as Duet, but I do think it's still a very strong episode and one of the stronger Voyager episodes. And it's probably the strongest Neelix episode in the series in terms of like really digging into the character and getting, you know, this kind of like raw exploration of what's going on inside Neelix. So I'm going to go ahead and give this one 8 Cascades.
Nice.
All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Jatril. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me right there. You can send us email if you'd like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose to the journey. And that will come back to us through the transwarp conduit back here to the Alpha Quadrant. And you can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to figure out how to dismantle an atomic bomb, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me, Chris, all over the place on social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, you can find me here on the network in the 602 Club outside of all of our great Star Trek talk with all the other great franchises that we love. So check all that out. You can also find me on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One's called Owl Post, talk about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And you can find me on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, if people are a little bit worried about you playing with uranium in your backyard, where can people find you?
Wow. I thought I was keeping that secret, but wow, I guess it's all the glowing at night, right?
So, nope, you're not. What it is. Well, that you got to stop.
When
that
I'm one. Not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network, doing all the podcasts with you, of course. You can find me in the back catalog on a wide range of shows. Got the Radio Room going again a little bit now with Larry Nemechek. And you can find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me everywhere. So drop me a line and I'd love to chat with you. And if you would like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to support the network, how to get involved. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you so much to everyone who is helping us now. Well, Matthew, I hope you're ready next time because we got to be quick. We got to get that cheese to sick bay as we talk about learning curve.
Ah, Chris, who moved my cheese? Set course for home.